This is the My Child Will Thrive podcast, and I'm your host, Tara Hunkin, certified functional nutritional therapy practitioner and mother. I'm here to share with you the latest research, expert advice, parent perspectives, resources, and tools to help you on your path to optimizing the health and development for your child with ADHD, autism, sensory processing disorder, learning disabilities, or other neurodevelopmental disorders. My own experiences with my daughter, combined with as much training as I can get my hands on, research I can dig into, and conferences I can attend, have helped me to develop systems and tools for parents like you who feel overwhelmed trying to help their children. So sit back as I share another great topic to help you on your journey. A quick disclaimer. Please keep in mind that the information provided is for information and educational purposes only. It is not intended to diagnose or treat your child and is not a substitute for working with a qualified practitioner. This episode of the My Child Will Thrive podcast is brought to you by the Autism, ADHD, and Sensory Processing Disorder Summit. You can sign up for free to watch 10 days of expert interviews and masterclasses at www.mychildwillthrive.com/summit. Now on with the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the My Child Will Thrive podcast. I am very excited to have with me today Lenora Edwards. She is a ASHA board certified speech language pathologist and chief knowledge officer with Better Speech. Since obtaining her certificate of clinical competence in 2010, she's worked with individuals of all ages, from little ones who are learning to understand and express themselves to adults who want to improve their speaking skills and become a more fluent and effective communicator. Thank you so much for joining us here today, Lenora, because much we can learn and need to learn about speech and how speech development can go awry or not develop typically, and what we can do about it. So I appreciate your time here to share that with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited for our conversation. I know we both have a background in child development and understanding all this fascinating, amazing information, and that we love to teach and to share it with others.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, the developmental trajectory of speech in terms of what it should look like and what are those signs that something might be going not according to plan.
Absolutely. So I often say, especially all the way at the very beginning, when people tell me that they're expecting, I say, great, start talking. Because little ones, as they're growing, they're obtaining information, and that's truly important. And no, your 8-month-old does not really know the difference between you saying the word spoon to the word cup, but they are starting to integrate the information. So that's why it's really important to keep talking and explaining what is going on in their world to them. So even at the very beginning, reading stories, singing to them, it's so important because what you're offering to them is language. And you're also shaping their perception of how they communicate. So we have words that we communicate with, but we're also communicating with our tone. We're also communicating with our facial expression. We're also communicating with our body. There's so much that's going on in communication. And it's truly how we all effectively interact in this world. We're able to communicate in ways that are meaningful to us and others can actually understand our message. Now, when it comes to language, there's two parts. There's the receptive component of language, which is everything that we understand. So following directions and understanding that a question is being asked of us, those are the receptive components of language. And then there's the expressive component. So everything that we're expressing, the words that are coming out of my mouth, the grammatical structure of how they're coming out, that's also language. So it's really, really, really wide and vast. When it comes to development, I usually like the rule of thumb of when they're 1 year old, their vocabulary is going to be one word. When they're 2 year old, their vocabulary is going to be starting to become two word combinations. So what that will look like is juice at 1 year old to more juice at 2 years old, and at 3 years old, more juice, please. And that's really a good rule of thumb. 1 year old, one word vocabularies, and so on and up.
I love that in terms of just simplifying it, because there are all these different milestones that we're always looking at. Most of us, when you first get pregnant, you end up with the what to expect when you're expecting. And then the next one is what to expect in the first year. But a lot of the people that are here have a child that they looked at those milestones and their child is either missing, has missed, or they have a delayed milestone, or they have regressed. So when do you think it is important that parents pay attention to that? And I'm not saying worry, but want to take steps, especially where it comes to speech, where mm-hmm. we want to take steps to see if we need to be doing more to support their speech development.
Completely. And for me, the first thing I usually go encourage people to do is to listen to their instincts. If you're rolling over at 2 a.m. and you're wondering about your child's language, trust your instincts and reach out to professionals. And especially the reason I suggest reaching out to professionals is because people all have their own stories, which is great. Your friends and your family are there to support you, and they're going to have their own stories. Oh, don't worry about it. Oh, they didn't talk till they were five. Oh, this, that, and the other thing. And that's great because they have their story and that's important to them. But also when it comes to you and your child, you want to make sure that you're doing what's in your best interest. So trust your instincts of saying, you know what, even if it's for my own comfort, even if the professional will think I am an overbearing person, that's the worst thing that's going to happen. And that's a really good thing, because you, as that guardian of that child, your instincts are there for a reason. And it's important to learn to trust yourself and to care for your child. When your little one is communicating, they're constantly communicating, even at 2 and 3 months old, you know the difference between their cries, because that little one wants you to know the difference between their cries. That's them communicating with you. And that's a really good thing. When they start to become more interactive, the things that you're looking for are longer eye contacts, longer engagement in the toy, this back and forth. They look at a toy, they show it to you. That's communication also. They're making coos and oohs. That's communication. That's a really good thing. When you notice that they might not be able to hold their attention on a toy, or they're not coming to show you, or they're not indicating to you their wants and their needs, those are absolutely red flags that you want to reach out to a professional, because naturally we're social creatures. We want to interact, and naturally children are wanting you to say, "Hey, look what I found. This is super cool." They're wanting to come up to you and interact. So if they're not doing that, that is absolutely a red flag. And their vocalizations, even if they're approximating for, let's say, up, and they're going, that's a really good thing. That's an approximation. That's their actual attempt to say the word cup. And if they're not doing any of that and they're just looking at it and pointing and holding out, that's communication. But now we want the vocalization with that communication. So what are the things that they can do versus what are the things that we also want to be seeing them do? And then if you're with a professional, share as much information as possible. And thank goodness for smartphones, because I encourage people to record their children all the time, because you can see what's going on. And if they come into a clinic or if they're online or something, you're getting a different child at that point now that you've introduced a professional, and they might be more shy. Absolutely record your kids and share it with professionals, because when we come and we work with our clients, I often tell people they're not the problem. They're simply a problem, because parents will take it on as, oh my God, what did I do to my child? They're not doing this. They're not doing that. And it's not like that at all. This isn't a judgment. This isn't a, how could you do this? This is simply your child is doing this and we want to do this. So let's go in that direction. So the more information and the better rapport and connection you can have with your professionals is absolutely in your favor.
Yeah, it's amazing how, well, so going back to, you know, you mentioned the thing about following your gut instincts in terms of if you think something's wrong, like you said, the worst thing that's going to happen is someone's going to tell you it's not wrong. And even in those cases, sometimes we have to push a little bit further because we may not have reached the right person yet. But regardless, your advice absolutely. Is so, so important, which is that, you know, what is the worst thing that's going to happen is we're going to be thought to be overbearing parents that are blowing things out of proportion. But typically when your gut's telling you it's not the case, then mm-hmm. it isn't. I know with my daughter who had significant speech delays, we were referred by our GP, because we didn't have a pediatrician at the time, to a local program. So I'm in Canada. We have different programs here than they do in the US and around the world. Everybody will have different things. And we did a program called the Hannon program. Don't know if you're familiar with that one, but where the speech language pathologist actually teaches the parents how to work with their children. And then they do videoing. This was a long time ago too. So videoing was not quite as easy as it is today. We didn't have the same access to smartphones way back in the good old days. She's now 19. And so you'd video what you did so that exactly like you said, so they could see what you were doing and how you were working with your child as well. Not just videoing the child, but also they would come and do that and critique how you work with your child. What would you say at the time I went through that program and then we were waiting for one-on-one support. So that was a group program where they actually brought the parents in as a group and we went to class to learn about speech and development and how to work with your child. But then we had to wait to get into the system that we have here to then get one-on-one support unless we went to private support. I had asked the speech pathologist at the time, I said, what do you think? You know, do I wait or what do I do? And she was like, don't wait. Mm-hmm. So what do you say to parents that are caught up in the system that it may sound like they can wait, but how important is early intervention when it comes to speech development?
That's a phenomenal question. Early intervention is true. For me, I think it's incredibly important. The earlier we can detect things, the better off it is. And the reason it's so important for early detection and for early intervention is because that little mind and body are growing and they're growing rapidly. And it's important to not wait because let's say you have concerns. Your two-year-old isn't talking. Their vocalizations are here and there, and they're not stringing words together. And we're getting occasional words, and you definitely have concerns. And now your pediatrician has concerns. If you wait and say, you know what, maybe in 3 months they'll catch up, you've now lost 3 months of time. Now let's say fast forward 3 months, you waited 3 months. Now you have to wait to actually connect with a professional. So I love that in your country, you have that program, and to teach parents is fantastic. Here in the US, there's often a 3 to 6 month waiting period just to get the evaluation with the professional. If you're going for outpatient services or if you're going within the school system. So now we went from 3 months to 6 months to almost 9 months. You lost 3, 6, and 9 months worth of progress, which means those neurons, those neural pathways are firing and wiring and working to do their best to communicate, but we've now lost time and this mind and body are growing. That's a good thing that they're growing, but they're not growing in the most supported way. So for me, early intervention and working with a professional as early as possible is the best option. So I err on the side of caution and I say, this is the worst that's going to happen. You're going to get to the evaluation and you're going to go, oh, you know what? And all resolved. Ah, ta-da. That's great. That's the best case scenario is that you waited. The worst case scenario is you now need services. And that's not a bad scenario to be in. That's a great scenario to be in to say, hey, I detected it early and now we have support. Onward we go. Both are win-win for me.
I totally agree with that. So it's interesting. I had mentioned to you before we started to record was that last year the CDC came out with different recommendations regarding developmental milestones, and that's caused a lot of frustration and confusion, I think, and with the organizations in particular. I had read a number of things that came out from the speech language pathologists about their concerns with those changes. So here we now have this major government organization that we all look to for these standards, saying that don't worry so much because they've just changed the way they're evaluating the data. Or their way they're deciding what a milestone is. What are your thoughts on that and those changes that they've made that really actually make those milestones further along?
For me, very personally, I look at the milestones that I was taught. I go back to what I learned at my core value of being a clinician. Is this child communicating? Now, when it came to the pandemic, there was, and we're seeing a quite the uptick in the need for speech therapy services in children. And the reason is because these little ones came into a world where their communication was blocked. So a lot of people were wearing masks. And at the time I worked in a skilled nursing facility, and parents that I had, my colleagues were parents, and they would go home with a mask on, and because they're trying to protect their children. All completely logical things that make sense, especially early on. We didn't know what we know now. We're now 3 years later. Needless to say, people were going home in masks. So now you've taken away half of your face for communication, and you're communicating. Your little one is also watching your mouth. They're watching your eyes. They're watching your whole face communicate. And we've now cut off half of it. The other thing is that they were not immersed in language-rich environments. So their brains are now having to work harder to absorb this information. So think about, you know, in 2018, if you had a little one, your neighbor was probably knocking on the door. You were probably having a side conversation. They were going to the grocery store with you. You were toting them to the playground. They were all in these language-rich environments. And we don't think of them as language-rich environments. We think of them as the grocery store, the playground, the swimming pool. But they were language-rich environments. And then these little ones that came into a pandemic world heard a lot of silence, didn't hear a lot of noise. Their brains were quite literally developing differently. So now we're taking our mind and body, which has been evolving for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, and now we're changing the guidelines. The reason I go back to what I was taught is because minds and bodies did not stop growing just because of a pandemic. And that's why I go back to it. So this for me, I will say it's very personal to me, but I think it's really important to offer as much education and say, okay, if their little one isn't understanding information or if they're not expressing information, that's okay. We were all doing the best that we could in 2020 and 2021 and so on and so forth. We now know more. Great. Also, how can we help? Ultimately, how can we help this little one succeed? That's the most important thing.
Yeah. It's amazing when you, because of my kids were teens when the pandemic hit, which had its own set of challenges. Oh, yeah. But to see, I remember very clearly seeing a parent to parents with their was obviously their first child. And it was the first time the child had ever been in a store.
Yeah.
And it was two and a half years old. And it was kind of fun to watch her run around, but she was, and unfortunately it was still a stage where she was still masked, but she'd never been to a store, and her dad was like, she's just like, doesn't know what to do with herself. Cause like, it was truly the kid in the candy store. In this case, it was the bookstore, but it is something that is, we cannot ignore. So we obviously have those kids that we identify young as having problems. What about when we have children that are older? So we for whatever reason, they may not be as identified early, or they have been worked on for, they've been working on things for a while, but they may have taken a pause. Mm-hmm. How do you work with the tweens and teens? Because that's a whole nother
totally
challenge.
Totally different ballgame. Especially because, and if you have a child who's differently developing or neurodiverse, the first speech language pathologist that you work with will not be your only speech language pathologist that you work with. And I encourage people to, just as if you would go for a second opinion to another physician, or if you were on a date with somebody and you don't have a good rapport with them, it's truly important to make sure that the client, so whether it be your child or your tween or your teenager or you, whomever you're working with, has a really good connection with the clinician that you're working with. So the first one that you are paired with, and let's say it's a great one, they might not be there for the next 10, 12 years of their life. And that's okay. That's a nice thing, that our careers as a clinician, my career evolves, but also as the child, they evolve and they will continue to build relationships with other clinicians. So that's a wonderful thing. When it comes to teens and tweens, what we are seeing right now is, because of the pandemic, there was a lot of use of passive information. So a lot of watching TV, and yes, that is language, but it's not interactive language. Whereas I encourage people to pause the movie, ask your teen or tween, what's going on in the movie? What's the storyline? What do you think the character is going to do next? Because what that will start to do is that'll trigger that thought flexibility. And that's a really good thing. A lot of the teens that I work with, or the tweens, they'll tell me, I don't know. That's okay. Any answer. Because I don't need the right answer. I want what they think. I want what's come, what they think is going to happen in this storyline. What do they think about the character? I want them to formulate their own opinions. And sometimes kids growing up, they think they have to have the right answer all the time. And when they don't have that right answer, they go to default of, I don't know. And I will throw out all different types of answers, all different types of creative things, because I want them to be more creative in that feeling that they can express themselves and that they're not having to always be right or to only have that one piece of information. And a lot of the time we're seeing and we're hearing, I don't know. So make it playful, when, especially if you have a tween or a teen at home and they're very into their game and yeah, it's just a game. Ask them to explain the game to you. And that in itself can be a red flag that they might not have the vocabulary skills, as in they don't know how to explain to you how they're interacting on their VR. And that is something to reach out to a speech language pathologist for. They might not be able to tell you what's going on in the storyline of, let's say, Star Wars or whatever movie they're watching. That is something to reach out to a speech language pathologist for, because they're understanding enough information, but they don't know how to communicate that information back to a listener. And that is something that's truly important. And not only is it for their thought flexibility of thinking how to solve a problem, but also how to explain a problem, how to explain an answer. It's truly, truly important. So if you want a different technique, start pausing those video games and teach them ways to, what do you think is going to happen next? And I like to make a game of it. Not only am I asking them, I'll come up with something else, because I don't want them to feel like they're constantly being tested. They need to give me an answer. It's not about giving me an answer. It's about having a conversation. It's about having a back and forth. It's about being able to have that give and take and progress that conversation to 10 and 15 minutes. It's truly important, because if they're stopping at 1 and 2 minutes, that's not a strong conversational skill. So this is, now they have their vocabulary, but can they grow in that conversation?
So that's really interesting, because I think that obviously we have a number of kids that have challenges around flexibility and thinking, and also sometimes it's anxiety around that conversation, but also not being able to identify obviously how to expand on the thought as well. And I think that a lot of people wouldn't have thought that was something that they would engage a speech language pathologist for support on. So that is really great information. Why is that so obviously most of us think of speech language pathology about articulation issues and mm-hmm. what we need to do to help them express themselves that way. How is that both, well, in that example you were giving, obviously that's conversational expression. So it's both expressive, but also probably receptive in mm-hmm. nature as well.
Very much so. So as a speech language pathologist, people often think, oh, there's nothing wrong with my speech. I speak clearly. And that's true. We actually work from the neck and up, as I often like to refer, as I often say to people. So in our career field, we see little ones for swallowing difficulties. I've worked in the NICU with little ones on having a safe suck, swallow, breathe, so that when they were able to actually take nutrition, were they able to do it comfortably? Was it going into the right area and not into their lungs? There's lots of things going on when a little one is eating. Were they able to move once they started to chew? Could they change the bolus from a munch pattern? Could they then start to lateralize it as they got older? So we see people for swallowing difficulties, not only in little ones, we also see them in the adult and geriatric population. We do see people for their articulation, but also for that language component of understanding language and expressing language. Also for cognitive skills, things like memory, sequencing, abstract reasoning, problem solving, budgeting, medication management, calendar organization, thought organization. And that's why I often say from the neck and up, because there's so much else going on. It's not just the intelligibility for our speech. And I loved whenever I work in skilled nursing facilities, I'll have, in, let's say, a 90-year-old person, and I'll say, oh, well, I'm from speech therapy. I'm like, but there's nothing wrong with my speech. I'm like, no, but I hear you have some difficulty with your memory. And they're like, oh, I definitely have difficulty with my memory. What's your name again? So it's, they're quite lovely in that population. So it truly is very, very, very wide in our field.
So do speech language pathologists typically specialize? It sounds like you've done a lot of work in a lot of different areas. Do you typically specialize in a particular type of speech therapy or of the field, whether it be working with young children with articulation or expressive language, or with teens or tweens with some of those communication and other things?
It depends on what we would like to do. I've done a wide array because I'm very curious and I really like to learn different things. There are people who truly just love pediatric population and they don't want to work with adults or traumatic brain injuries or stroke patients. And that's perfectly perfect. There are people that specialize in working with voice and they work really closely with individuals who are experiencing Parkinson's and people with, or even post-COVID, when they don't have that breath support, they really specialize in helping them achieve that breath support so that they can vocalize clearly. It's entirely up to the clinician and what they would like to do with their career. We don't have to only go to school for pediatrics and that's it. When we go to school, we all have our master's degree and our CCC SLP means that we have a certificate of clinical competence, which means we passed our boards because we went to school and we were trained in all of these areas, then we got tested in all of these areas, and then we all completed what is a referred to as your CFY year, your clinical fellowship year. And that is what you go through with a supervising speech language pathologist before you enter the career as a full board certified, get your C's. And it's a very lovely career to be a part of because there really is a lot of unity and a lot of support. There's so much support in this field. And that's a great thing.
That's wonderful.
It's whatever they would like to do.
Yeah. So let's talk about Better Speech, the company that you're the chief knowledge officer for. It's an online speech therapy company, and which makes it super accessible for people. And I know that it existed pre-COVID. It's not, mm-hmm. It wasn't a COVID baby in terms of a business. It's been around for a while. So can you tell me a little bit about that? And then how you would, from within a company like that, because you have, I think in that company around 150 mm-hmm. speech language pathologists that are available. How do you find that right fit for your child to work with when you have a pool, either whether it's through Better Speech or anywhere else? How mm-hmm. how do we go and find when there's so many different specialties?
So when specifically with Better Speech, you're right, we have been online since long before the pandemic. We're very comfortable on Zoom. And people often ask, can you do speech therapy with my two-year-old online? And absolutely. And what I love about this is we are there in your home with you. So we're in the space that your child is most comfortable in. And as a speech language pathologist, I am board certified, but then I'm also licensed in different states. So for me, I'm very specifically licensed in 4 states. So when you go to the website and you sign up for your complimentary consultation, of which everybody gets one. So if you have questions, reach out to us. We're there and you will get a live person, which is great. When you get paired with your speech language pathologist in that state, so we will say, okay, so I live in the state of Pennsylvania. Great. There are 10 speech language pathologists. Here's the one that is specializing in pediatrics, and we'll see if we can match it up. So then that way you can get it matched as early as the next business day, which is truly something very, very empowering, especially when you hear from an outpatient clinic that you have to wait 6 months to get an evaluation. And we're able to provide that service the very next day. That's the beauty of being online and being able to operate the way that we do. So then as the clinician, while I'm working with that client, I also offer the ability to record the session, because there's so much information that we're talking about in those moments, in that 30 minute or 45 minute, 60 minute session, whatever it may have been. There's a lot going on. And to ask that in that parent or guardian to remember everything is a little overwhelming. So the fact that they can record it and they can go back to it is truly empowering for them. And then they get to pass it along if they want to pass it to a grandparent or an au pair, whoever it may be. It's also helping to take care of that child, because that offers that joint unity. Now everybody's on the same page. This is what we're seeing. These are the techniques that we're applying, because parents and guardians are there much more often than I am, one time a week. So for them to be able to really learn what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, how to do it when I'm not there, is really empowering for them. And they get the opportunity to feel like they're back in the driver's seat of, oh, thank God, my world isn't falling apart. I now have solutions to the problems that I was experiencing. And I love that. I think that's so important. And if you were in a school system, you don't necessarily get that option. And then even in outpatient clinics, at one point, they were separating the parent and the guardian from the child. And then you have quick 36 seconds before you have to pass the child off to somebody else and get another person to come into your therapy room. It's a lot. So the fact that it's online and it's so accessible and it's in your home and it's on your schedule is a world of a difference. So it's really using technology to our power and opportunity.
Yeah, it's a really, really important point. Because like I said to you before, when I had, through the program that I went to, I got lots of education and understanding, but that was a lot of time invested in those programs. Still think it was great time. But in terms of when we got to the one-on-one private, sometimes I'd be in the room, sometimes I wouldn't, depending on whether or not she could attend to things. Sometimes she'd do better if I wasn't in the room, mm-hmm. but then there would be that download. These are the things I want you to work with. And like, and you haven't seen it in action. So it is amazing how that, and then like you said, the continuity of care, that this, everybody's getting the same message. Because the thing that I think that people need to know the most about speech language pathology, because it is a form of neuro rehab, because like you said, it's the neck up. Frequency, intensity, duration is important in anything that we're doing neuro rehab wise, so that we can leverage that positive neuroplasticity. So you'll get better results if you can practice it at home. Once a week, it's just not going to cut it. Yeah. So having that recording is going to be super helpful to a lot of parents to help support that moving forward.
Yeah, very much so.
So so obviously Better Speech has the system to help you find the right person. If you were going somewhere outside of Better Speech, like just in your community, what are the things that people should be looking for in terms of qualifications and experience to work with a child and, you know, let's say younger children versus older children?
So when you're working with a speech language pathologist, they should have their C's, they should be licensed, and you can ask for their license number, and you can make sure that they are board certified. Especially in our in our field, there is a lot of handholding, which is great. So if somebody's not experienced in pediatric development, it doesn't mean that they're a bad clinician. It just simply means they probably just came out of school and they're learning the ropes and they're getting their feet wet in the community and in that specific area. And usually there is another senior therapist. I love teaching facilities because if you go to a university, so here where I live, there are universities where families that live locally can go and you will work with a student clinician that is supervised by a board licensed clinician. And that I think is a beautiful thing because you're getting different eyes, people are learning, and you're getting the support you need. So the things, those are definitely the credentials that I would look for, but also when you're working with a speech language pathologist, make sure that your child is having fun. When your child is having fun with the clinician, that is going to truly empower and build and grow that communication development. And it is so, so important. It cannot be overlooked.
Yeah, so true. The number of games that we acquired over the years that were used in the speech therapy office that then we had to acquire for home.
Oh yeah.
Which were incredibly helpful because when it's fun, it's not therapy, right? So, yeah. Which is always the challenge for parents or caregivers at home. So I couldn't agree with that more. This has been so much help. I really appreciate you spending the time with us today. And I would imagine that there's a lot of people that have opened their eyes to all the things beyond speech articulation in particular and expressive language that they may not have known that a speech language pathologist could help them with their child. And like I said, so many of them have a number of the things that they may not have thought to go to you to get support on, like flexibility and thinking and about how to have proper conversational language in their lives. So that was really enlightening today. I want to, well, thank you for your time, but do you have one thing that you would, a piece of advice that you would give to parents, one last piece of advice that what you've learned and gathered from working with the pediatric patient population over the years that you want them to know before we go today?
Oh gosh, just one? Heaven above.
Just one. What's the biggest one that you wish that all parents understood maybe when they're first coming into your office or the first time that they meet and work with you online?
I would say trust your instincts. If you are going, I'm not sure, trust your instincts and just talk to a professional.
Perfect. We talk about that all the time around here. So I really appreciate that. If any of you that are listening or watching are interested in reaching out to betterspeech.com to get the free consult that Lenora talked to us about, you can just go to www.betterspeech.com. The link to their website, along with their Instagram and Facebook, is all in the show notes for today's episode. So you can go and grab them there if you're listening on the go right now. And I just want to thank you all for joining us again for another episode of the podcast. And I look forward to seeing you all again soon. Thanks so much. Thanks for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this episode, please support us by subscribing and giving us a review on your podcast platform of choice. This is Tara Hunkin, and I'll catch you on the next episode of the podcast or over at mychildwillthrive.com, where you can find articles and the free My Child Will Thrive toolkit.